Thank you. And I wish to thank organizers for giving me this very good opportunity. Today, I want to talk about the geometry of the moduli space of Brody curve. The title is this. We want to study the G-space, namely the space of Brody curves. F is a homomorphic map from C to CPN, and the derivative is bounded by 1. We want to study the geometry of this moduli space. But it is easy to see that this space is an infinite dimensional space. So the problem is, what is the geometry of infinite dimensional space? And today, we want to study its mean dimension. And intuitively, mean dimension is given this formula. So it is a dimension over the volume of complex plane. Of course, the dimension is infinite and the volume is infinite. So this is infinite over infinite. So this is not a rigorous formula, but Gromov proposed a way how to define this kind of quantity correctly. And first, I want to explain the Gromov theory. Mean dimension is defined by Gromov. And I first show you the most fundamental example. This is the most fundamental example. Let B, this mean dimension is a not topics of complex analysis. This is a topic of general topology. Let B be the closed ball in the Euclidean space. Then, of course, the volume is N, of course, obvious. And next, consider the infinite product of V, so this kind of space, indexed by the integers. Then, of course, VZ is an infinite dimensional space. But important point for us is that this space admits a natural group action. That is, the additive group Z naturally acts on this VZ, so-called symbolic dynamics. So this index is replaced by this formula. And under this situation, Gromov defines the mean dimension. It is intuitively, it is a dimension of an infinite dimensional space, averaged by some group action. And in this case, it is equal to n. This is mean dimension. So intuitive meaning is, mean dimension is a dimension of Vz over the order of z. Of course, order of z is infinite, but very intuitively, dimension of Vz is equal to n times order of z. Then n times the order cancels, then we get n. This is the intuitive meaning of mean dimension. And of course, this is not rigorous, so I will show you the rigorous definition. First, I need to introduce one classical general topologic argument, that is, Wittes dimension. This is a way how to define the dimension for general topological space. Let XD be a compact metric space, possibly infinite dimensional space, and Y a topological space, and F be a continuous map from X to Y, and epsilon be a real number, a positive real number. Then the definition one, F is called an epsilon embedding if and only if for all fiber has a diameter less than or equal to epsilon. So the picture is the following. The X is a tube, and Y is a plane. And there is some map, F. F is called an epsilon embedding if and only if for each Y, the fiber has a diameter less than or equal to epsilon. So up to some error term, F is the embedding. Next, we define the width dimension of X and there is a scalar parameter epsilon. That is, this is the definition. This is definition. It is a minimum number of n such that there exists a polyhedron of dimension n and a epsilon embedding from X to P. So P, in some sense, P approximates X. Our polyhedron is a topological space which admits a simplicial complex structure. So this n is a dimension of X up to the scale epsilon. So the example is this, natural example is this. X is equal to 0, 1 times 0 epsilon with a natural Euclidean length, and epsilon is less than 1. Then the natural projection, this map, the projection to 0, 1 closed interval, is an epsilon embedding. Of course, each fiber has a length epsilon. So this is epsilon embedding. So the width dimension is less than or equal to 1. And in fact, it is easy to see that this is equal to 1. So up to the scale epsilon, this space X is a one-dimensional space. Of course, genuine dimension is 2, of course. And one important remark is, if we let epsilon go to 0, then this gives the usual dimension. Perhaps this is, essentially this was known to Urizon or some other general topologist in the beginning of 20th century. So, for example, X is a n-dimensional cube with a shape distance, then the width dimension is given as follows. If epsilon is greater than or equal to epsilon, then the width dimension is 0. So, up to scale change of epsilon, this looks like a zero-dimensional space. And if epsilon is less than epsilon, then width dimension is n. So this gives a natural dimension. And this width dimension is a topics of general topology in the beginning of 20th century. Next, we go to mean dimension. This is introduced by Gromov. Let XD be a compact metric space as before, and in this case, consider the group action, that is additive group Z, continuously acts on X. Then in this situation, we can define the new distance dn for each integer n by this formula. That is, this is the distance between the orbit of X and Y. So X, Y, there is a group action, so these moves. And lengths change. So take the max of these lengths. And perhaps, if you know the dynamical system theory, you know the same thing in the definition of topological entropy. Then we define the mean dimension as follows. First, for each epsilon, we define the epsilon mean dimension by this formula. So in this case, epsilon is fixed. And we move the distance, dn, and consider the growth rate of this width dimension. This is epsilon mean dimension. And finally, we define the mean dimension by letting epsilon go to 0. This is a non-negative real number or sometimes becomes infinity. This is definition of mean dimension. And one important remark is that this is a topological invariant. That is, if we use another distance, d prime with compatible with the topology, compatible with the, but I'm sorry, if we start with another distance d prime which defines the same topology, then the value of mean dimension is the same. So it is a topological invariant. The most important and fundamental example is that if x is an infinite cube with a natural direction, then mean dimension is 1. What? And and in this case, we consider the mean dimension under the action of z. But in the geometry of Brody curve, we need the action of c. We consider c as a natural regroup as a under the natural group under the natural additive group action. So we need to define the new mean dimension. Of course, this is also introduced by Gromov. Let XD be a compact metric space and consider the group action of C. And in this case, for each real number R, we define the new distance DR in the same manner. So we consider the R disk in the complex plane and take the orbit, consider the orbit and take the distance. This is a new distance on R, on X. And we define the mean dimension in the same way. First, we define the epsilon mean dimension by this formula. So we consider the growth rate of this epsilon mean dimension. And of course, this pi R square is the volume of this. And let epsilon goes to zero, we get the mean dimension. This is also topological invariant. So this pi r square is a volume. So intuitively, this is mean dimension is a dimension over volume. Then the general topology is over, and we go to a complex analysis. First, we review the elementary fact about Brody curves. Let z be the natural coordinate, and x is a holomorphic map from C to CPN. But we define the so-called spherical derivative, or the normal df, by this formula. For if f is given by this formula locally, we define the square of the normal df by this formula. Of course, the meaning of this formula is this. C has a natural Euclidean length, and CPN has a natural Fubini-Study metric, and it considers U as a tangent vector in C and C, and this tangent vector goes to dFu by the map F. Then the length of dFu is given by the normal dF times the length of Euclidean length. This is the meaning of the this spherical derivative. Then we call F is a Brody curve if and only if the spherical derivative is bounded by 1 for all z. And one important remark is that if the spherical derivative is bounded by some constant C, then the scale change becomes a Brody curve. The elementary example of Brody curves are the following. These are all examples for n equal 1. There is a meromorphic function and the Brody curve. One, fz is given by, if fz is an exponential function, then it is Brody. And two, if FZ equals to Z, then this is Brody. And more generally, if FZ is a rational function, then some scale change becomes a Brody. Because we define the Brody is a spherical, Brody condition is that the spherical derivative is bounded by one. So if FZ is a rational function, we can prove that there is a some constant C bound by, bound this spherical derivative. So the scale change becomes a Brody curve. Example 3. Let FZ be an elliptic function, that is, there is a lattice such that F is symmetric under this lattice action. Then it is easy to see that there is a constant C such that the spherical derivative is bounded by C. So in this case, this scale change becomes Brody curve. And interesting example is 4. If FZ is Z plus if Z is a Z plus exponential function, then the supremum of spherical derivative is become infinity. Note that exponential function is Brody and FZ equal to Z is also Brody, but Z plus exponential function never be Brody, even if any scale change of FZ cannot be Brody. And I ran this example from Professor Winkelmann perhaps 2 years ago. And this example, so this example 4 shows that the Brody condition is a very nonlinear condition. Then we consider the moduli space of Brody curves. Let MCPN be the set of Brody curves in CPN, and we consider the usual compact open topology. Then the classical normal family argument shows that MCPN becomes a compact metrizable space. And there is a natural group action, that is, C, the complex Lie group C naturally acts on this moduli space by this formula. So C acts on the acts on MCPN by the parallel translation of the domain. So we get the situation. MCPN is a compact metrizable space. So fix some distance. And there is a natural group action. So this is a continuous action. So we can consider the mean dimension. Then the basic problem is compute the value of mean dimension. And this is the main task. Of course, I don't have a complete answer, but I have some good answer for this value, and I want to show it. But before giving a main result, we need to introduce one more notion, that is mean energy. Let F be a Brody curve in CPN, and let T alpha F be the usual characteristic function, so-called Schmidt alpha characteristic function. Then the Brody condition is that the spherical derivative is bounded by one. So it is easy to see that this characteristic function is bounded by pi r square over 2. So then we define mean energy EF by this formula. Pi r 2 square is the same. Then from this inequality, this is contained in the closed interval 0, 1, obvious. So for example, exponential function has a zero mean energy, and if g is a non-constant elliptic function, then the mean energy becomes positive. These are very easy. And finally, we define ECPn by the supremum of mean energy over the all Brody curves. So this is also contained in the closed interval 0, 1. But important fact is that this defines a non-trivial number. That is, that by definition, this is a contained in closed interval, but actually, this is strictly positive and strictly less than 1. So this gives some non-trivial number. I call this ECPn mean energy. So the reason mean energy, the reason of the terminology is that this df square, the normal, the square of the spherical derivative is usually called energy density in the differential geometry. So I call this mean energy. And I want to introduce one more variant of mean energy. That is mean energy of elliptic version. We define the ECPn elliptic is the supremum of EF, but F runs over all elliptic Brody curves. Brody curve F is called elliptic if there exists a lattice such that F is symmetric under this lattice action. So in other words, we consider only Brody curves factored through some elliptic curve. And obviously, we have this inequality. ECPn L is less than or equal to this genuine ECPn. Obvious, because the set becomes smaller. And I don't know whether these two values are really different or the same. I don't know. But we can prove that if n goes to infinity, these are equal, both become equal to 1. And this asymptotic fact can be considered as a famous result of so Kempf, Z, Tian, Zeldzich, and perhaps there is somebody, I don't know. So we introduce two important data. One is ECPn, and the other is the elliptic version. This is the main result. Mean dimension and mean energy. Recall that MCPn is the space of the moduli space of Brody curves in CPn, and there is a natural group action. And then we can consider the mean dimension. And my main result is this inequality. The mean dimension is so mean dimension is bounded by below by this elliptic version of mean energy and by above by this mean energy. And these two quantities become both goes to 1 as n goes to 1 as n goes to infinity. So asymptotically, very roughly speaking, asymptotically, these values are between 2n to 4n. this is my main estimate of mean dimension. And one remark, for the upper bound of mean dimension, Gromov also gave us certain estimate by using the result of Eremenko. And of course, Gromov did not give a detail as usual, so I cannot say whether my estimate is better than Gromov's estimate or not. But actually, I believe that my I conjecture that my estimate becomes the best possible estimate, at least when n equals 1. That is, if n equals 1, then this theorem 2 comes. The mean dimension the moduli space of Brody curve in CP1 is bound by this formula. And in this formula, I want to propose the following conjecture. ECP1 elliptic might be equal to ECP1. And if this is true, then we get this mean dimension formula. And at least for me, this formula looks very beautiful. So I conjecture that this equality holds. But I want to give one remark about this conjecture. Thus, an elliptic function f constructed below might be a. The elliptic function f constructed below might be a good candidate for the function which attains the supremum of f. That is, consider the regular triangle in the complex plane C, and consider a regular tetrahedron in the Riemann sphere. And by using a Riemann mapping theorem, we can construct a holomorphic map f, send this regular triangle to this regular spherical triangle. And the length of this regular triangle is determined so that the super of spherical derivative becomes 1. And it is easy to see that this f can be extended to all over C, and this becomes a Brody elliptic curve. And of course, this function is a famous function, and this function is an extremal function of a so-called Bloch-Constantine problem solved by Bonk and Eremenko. The main reason for why this f can be extended to all over C is a so-called reflection principle. And then this meromorphic function, actually an elliptic function f, satisfies this differential equality. And by using this inequality, we can easily compute its mean energy. Mean energy gives by this. And this is equal to 0.6150, so on. And then from theorem 2, is this. So the mean dimension is bounded by mean energy from below. So from this theorem, we get this lower bound. Mean energy is bounded by below by 2, 4, 6, 0, 0, and so on. And this inequality might be an equality. So if this f attains the supremum of mean energy, then this inequality becomes equality. So if it is true, we can get a so precise value of mean dimension. Of course, this is a future problem. And so first, I want to show the proof of upper bound. And in this upper bound, we use the Nevan-Lena theory. But we use only a first main theorem. So, lemma one. Let FG be a Brody curve and take a lattice in C such that EF plus EZ bound by one over the volume of fundamental domain. This norm of C over lambda means the volume of fundamental domain of lambda in C. So of course, we all people know that if omega 1 and omega 2 generate the lattice, then the norm is give this volume. Then and suppose that the volume of F and G are the same over the lattice point, then actually F must be equal to G. The proof is the following. An argument so similar to the following proof was essentially given by Ermenko in 1998. And for simplicity of the argument, I assume n equal 1, but the general case is almost same. Suppose f equal to g over the lattice point and suppose F is not identical equal to Z, then using some rotation of the Riemann-Sousia, we can easily suppose that the value of lattice point does not contain an infinity. Then, the meromorphic function F minus Z inverse has a pole at each point of the lattice point, because F equals Z over the lattice point. Then some consideration of first main theorem easily shows that this key alpha F inverse F minus Z bound from below by this quantity. And it is bound from above by this form quantity. And remember that mean energy gives this formula. So we finally get this. And obviously, this contradicts the assumption. So we get the lemma. What? So this is just for simplicity of the explanation. We can prove, the general case is a little bit more argument, but essentially the same. Then we go to the upper bound proof. So we prove this upper bound. So we prove this upper bound formula. Take a lattice with satisfying this inequality, and consider the map from the moduli space to CPN lambda. So CPN lambda is an infinite product of CPN indexed by lambda. So please give me one pen. Thank you. This is so. This is a infinite product of CPN indexed by